looking into a crystal ball, and I don't know why. Living too fast to live too long. Well, I don't wanna die, but I don't know yet where I belong. Your bottle is empty, but your glass has been filled. And I don't want to break your heart, but I probably will.
You're listening to Holy Commutes for Monday, October 4th, 2021. Holy Commutes is the only daily morning podcast dedicated to all things Wiffleball. This is Paul and Tim Cook back with you for this month's Monday episodes of the show. Both this morning and throughout the Monday episodes this month, we will be discussing the obvious topic for October, which is the second annual United Wiffleball National Championship Tournament, which is coming up October 22nd through October 24th at People's Bank Park in York, Pennsylvania. Tim and I and others have been, you know, hard at work in this tournament for, you know, a long time now. It's, you know, sort of unbelievable that we're already less than 20 days away from it. The nerves have really started to kick up. That excited, you know, anxiousness you get, you know, anytime before a big tournament, anytime after you put a lot of work into something. I really can't see at this point how we're going to get everything done we need to get done, but somehow it always gets done. But I think overall we're just really, really excited to see this tournament play out, to see sort of the work that went into all the different aspects of it play out, and just, you know, sort of see what the final product is. To that end, you know, this year we made, some conscious and necessary decisions to not stand pat when it came to certain, things involved with the tournament last year, and to not rerun exactly what we did last year. Basically because there's nothing to be learned from that. I think the feeling is, if you don't take calculated risk, if, you know, we aren't sort of, you know, pushing forward, sort of trying to fix, maybe even if they're smaller things, try to, you know, fix some stuff that maybe didn't work last year, sort of push the boundaries in terms of, you know, number of teams and all this other stuff. You're not going to really learn anything, and you're just going to sort of stay where you are. It's all about gathering that empirical evidence. By doing new things, you can get more evidence and more support for what may work and what may not work, and use that to inform, future decisions. And that's what this, you know, year has kind of been about, you know, because really it's about balancing like the two extremes. You and I have been doing this for 20 plus years, Tim, and we've, you know, I think we've seen, you know, decisions sort of made on both extremes and then made in the middle. You know, the one extreme is, okay, well, what I did year one, or what I did the first time out, quote unquote, worked. So I know what I'm doing. I'm just going to rerun that for the rest of time. And the downfall there is, you don't, by not doing anything new, you don't really know what worked. You just kind of settle into, you know, to what was okay the first time. You don't really know if that's the best path. Then the other side of the spectrum, the other end, would be, you know, changing things up year after year, just sort of never settling in, always trying out, always trying to reinvent the wheel year after year. And you also don't learn anything in that situation, because you never let anything play out long enough to know whether it would work. So it's really just about finding that balance, kind of doing incremental changes, not reinventing the wheel, not tearing apart what worked last year, but making these incremental movements and, you know, hoping they result in upgrades and, you know, positive things. I mean, you know, would you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I look at it from like a perspective of video games, specifically Nintendo. So like, the Nintendo released the original Nintendo Entertainment System in 1983. So really only 6 years before the first, you know, official national Wiffleball championship. And, you know, it was their first system. It, you know, was revolutionary in, you know, so many ways. And what they decided to do for their second system was, instead of going for the complete revolution, they looked for a balance, and they came out with the Super Nintendo. And what the Super Nintendo brought was, you know, better graphics, longer games. It, you know, it iterated on everything that made the NES good. It tried to fix some of its shortcomings and, you know, helped guide them into that next era. So then when the Nintendo 64 came out in 1996, that was the next radical shift for Nintendo. They hadn't done anything like that since the original NES, because it was welcoming, you know, people's favorite franchises into 3D, Mario and Zelda. And so Nintendo again decided, okay, the next system, the GameCube, we're not going for the next revolution. We're looking to iterate on that process again. And we're going to make games that again take, use the technology, you know, better, you know, again, make, you know, take what they learned on the N64 and try to, you know, not perfect anything, but try to bring it to the, you know, to another level.
Yeah. It was, you know, moving the disc, you know, getting a little bit more storage there, but basically, you know, the same thing as every other thing was basically just, yeah, building off of what they built off before.
Yeah. And then the Wii comes around and that's their next revolution. And it's, you know, it's motion controls. It's, you know, everyone in the family can, you know, use and play and have fun with this system. And, you know, there are still, you know, you still had your, you know, key hardcore games, but it was, you know, the move to motion controls, you know, was a, you know, complete departure from the N64 GameCube era. And then they iterate that on, you know, when the Wii U comes out, and, you know, they refined it, and, you know, again, did what they did, you know, have shown in history to do with their next system. And then when the Switch came out in 2017, that was the next revolution. And we don't, you know, as we sit here today, we don't know what that, you know, what that next system is, but, you know, that's,
I think the key word there is, yeah, you know, iterating and iterations, and like, you know, like you talk about go from like the Wii U to Switch. It was, you know, okay, we did motion controls, and here's some stuff we, you know, with the Wii and Wii U, or some stuff we learned from that worked and didn't work, and now you've got sort of a more balanced model in the Switch, where there is motion controls, but it also feels more like a traditional gaming system than the Wii did. And yeah, that's the kind of things I think. That's kind of how I think it's a good way to look at this tournament. And I think, you know, how it will be going forward is, you know, looking for these areas of improvement, or looking for these areas of gains, and just sort of building on what you did in the past, not tearing down and starting over, but, you know, always just trying to look for those little ways to move ahead. And in doing so, I think, you know, every once in a while you may, you know, stumble upon, you know, something that brings it to the next level.
Unless you do try some things that, you know, may fail, or, yeah, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, you sent me a quote the other day, and I don't think this was fully about Wolf of Ball, maybe, you know, just a little bit, but, you know, basically said that like the, you know, to really sort of, you know, achieve something, or really sort of, you know, do something, you know, great, you have to, you have to be willing to fail. You have to have that, you know, nervousness that, hey, this stuff may not work. And there is some stuff this year that, yeah, you know, we've stepped out on a limb on, and, you know, not all of it's going to work out like we, you know, hoped or whatever. You know, we hope most of it, you know, will, but, you know, again, that's how you learn, and that's how you move forward. So yeah, so like, you know, into that end, like we went into this year, you know, we knew a handful of teams probably wouldn't be back for, you know, the various reasons that, you know, whatever those would be, they got the experience the one time, and that was, you know, good enough for them, you know, which is great. That's kind of, you know, you want people to be able to, you know, try stuff out. You don't want to be relying on your base, you know, audience the entire time. You know, and, you know, we knew there'd be some consolidation, and we knew all both of those things would kind of be offset by some new teams, but, you know, we didn't know for sure, you know, we set that 44 number, and that's, you know, you know, that was a stretch, but we wanted to find out, okay, you know, what's sort of the demand for this tournament. You know, and we're as, you know, as we record this a few days before Monday, you know, we're just sort of finishing up the last couple teams. You know, hopefully we'll be there by the time this drops, but, like, you know, that's been a process, but it's been a very, very valuable one. We've learned a lot from it. We've actually been able to promote the tournament this year, which we didn't do last year because we built up right away. So it's all good stuff there. And, you know, sort of looking about how, you know, we got to the 44 teams, I think it's important to, I don't know, thanks, not really the right word, but to sort of acknowledge the MAW participation in this. You know, obviously we have a vested interest in that, but, you know, in order for a big national tournament to work, you need a base of quote unquote local teams, the promoting organization, the teams that play in that promoting organization to show out. You need those players and those teams to show out and form a base. And that's true across you know, the wiffle ball universe, whether no matter what style of play it is. You look at the hometown cup, you know, drawing 80 teams, and, you know, I can't throw a specific number on it, but I want to say like 60-ish of those are Indiana teams. And I, you know, I feel like a whole bunch of them are, you know, relatively even then local to, you know, where the hometown cup is. And yeah, so you need that kind of thing. And what's been cool about the MAW participation this year is that, you know, for the most part, it's been teams sticking together with their basic teams from, you know, from the year. There's 20 teams as of right now that played in an MAW tournament in 2021 that are playing, you know, as a team, three or more guys, except for Ridley Park, which I'm kind of giving a pass to because they kind of changed up a little bit, but it's really just one team there, but that's still the same thing. They're playing as their team, three or more guys. 13 of those 20 teams, you know, basically full-time MAW teams, five played in two or three tournaments, you know, some kind of part-time-ish, but still kind of full-time. And then two of them just played in one tournament. But yeah, I just think that's really cool. Like, I don't know if, you know, thank you is the right word or whatever. Cause I'm not sure if anyone, you know, did any of that stuff on purpose, but it's really cool that we have all those teams still playing as their own team. And that's what allows this to be such a big tournament. If all of those guys decided, all right, we're going to play, but, you know, hey, we finished middle of the pack at MAW. So why don't us two teams join up with our good players, you know, and then even if those other players end up joining up, you know, two to form a team, yeah, we've got another team, but it's not gonna be as competitive. I think, and we're gonna talk about this more later on, I think the cool thing with the MAW teams is that they're gonna bring a lot of competitiveness to this tournament, especially early on.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Wiffle has always been its strongest when you have that rock solid foundation. Yeah. And for United Wiffle this last year and this year, you know, MAW has played a huge part in that.
Yep. And that's, you know, that's not to say anything of anyone else. You know, the other sort of big goal, or another thing I want to point out this year is, you know, there's been tremendous growth outside the Northeast. Last year, yep, the mantra, you know, within all of us in United Wiffle Ball was Midwest, 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 because that was the obvious, you know, part of the country where there was a ton of wiffle ball being played that, you know, this lineage of national championship tournament hadn't, in the last, you know, decade or so, hadn't, you know, grabbed, you know, and so it was a big target last year. We got two teams last year that was, you know, we're happy with that, and that was great. And then it paid fruit this year. We've got seven teams in the Midwest.
Yeah, more than tripled.
Yeah. And talking about the center of the country, we went from one Texas team to four Texas teams. You know, so that's, you know, again, we just want to thank everyone for that, for continuing to sort of, you know, support and try this out. And what's also cool about those teams is, I think, for the most, so, like, you know, the real reason that it's kind of important for sort of the more local teams to, you know, all show up in the numbers they have and in the way they have is because, you know, naturally when you got teams traveling long distance, you know, you're not necessarily going to play with the team you played with, you know, all the time, even if you have one, and you may not even, you know, cause it may just be your league team or whatever. But for the most part, all these teams that are coming from outside the Northeast, you know, are playing with just people from their league and just their friends, their guys they want to play with. And that's really cool too.
Yeah. That goes back to, you know, how we started in 1998. Like, there was never a thought that it wouldn't be me, you, and our, you know, two good friends who, you know, lived, you know, a block away. And that's, you know, that's how both the MAW and the Midwest and the Texas teams have, you know, all come together.
Yep. No, it is cool to see. And, you know, obviously anyone can do whatever, you know, they want. And that's the whole point of this, you know, format. But, like, when you're sort of trying to analyze why we were able to get to 40 teams last year, because the same thing happened last year. We were kind of taken by surprise by how many teams we got that were, like, you know, you look at it on paper and, like, well, they're not going to win. And they're okay with that. you know, they're just there to compete and have fun. And that's happened again this year. And I almost don't want to speak about it out loud because you feel like you're jinxing it. But like, for whatever reasons that has happened, and you know, that's cool. And I'm not going to take any time, but
yeah. And you know, let's be fair. All of these, you know, most of these guys are competitors, and, you know, in the back of their mind, even though, you know, they know that, you know, the odds are probably stacked against them,
right?
You know, there's still that belief, we can pull this upset. And, you know, and that's also what makes that competition so great.
Yep. Yep. No, whatever the reasoning is, there's a lot of guys out there just, it's great that, you know, just want to compete and take it as far as they can. And that's what you need, or that's what you like to see. So sort of on that, so it's, you know, to move on, like one of the big things that we did this year was the link tournaments, sort of the new thing, you know, last year, you know, just completely open, completely, standalone, in terms, you know, structurally, you know, there was an acknowledgement of, you know, of other leagues and tournaments, but, you know, given how late in the process we were, that was really all there was. This year we introduced this linked tournament concept, which, you know, in my mind has already been a success, based on the fact that, you know, you look at some of these tournaments, be it Southeast Wiffle or the MLW tournament, or even a team or two, or a team and some players in Texas. There was a bunch of teams that patronized these tournaments and went to these tournaments that otherwise wouldn't have. So in my mind, it's already a success to that, in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what, you know, we named it United Wiffle because, you know, if you're gonna run a national championship, you have to have all of those elements come together, and, you know, they just have to get that success.
I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, you know, a big thing for, you know, me personally has always sort of been, you know, having the Wiffle Ball, having the season sort of be cohesive, and sort of the greater Wiffle Ball world be cohesive. I like that in, you know, any form of entertainment, you know, having, you know, big universes and that cohesiveness. And I think that's added that element to it, you know, and just to be blunt, I think, you know, it was long overdue that, you know, the NCT, this lineage of tournaments, you know, acknowledge the fact that, you know, the NCT is not the be all end all. It's not, you know, the only thing that matters in the Wiffle universe, and stuff that happens before October plays an impact on that tournament, whether it's acknowledged or not. You know, you and I have gotten some side eye looks when we've told people, you know, well, we don't want the NCT to be the be all end all. It's not necessarily, you know, a thousand percent, you know, it's not necessarily certain that the team that wins this tournament, depending on your perspective, you know, is the best team in the country. And that's a weird thing. That's a weird thing to hear people say when they're promoting the NCT. But it's also just the truth, and it's okay to say that. It's okay to, you know, for there to be, you know, subtleties, and for not everything to be so definitive. And I think the link tournaments, you know, have been a big part of that, of sort of, you know, acknowledging that reality.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
You know, and that's really what it comes down to. It's kind of the difference between, you know, equity and equality. And I think we probably talked about this earlier, but you know, if I'm having a foot race, you know, with like an 80-year-old, you know, guy who's got like one knee replaced, we're having a foot race on a football field. The equal thing is we both start from the goal line, and whoever gets to the 50-yard line first wins. That's the equal thing. We both start at the same starting point. The equitable thing is acknowledging the fact that, okay, before we got to the goal line, I'm at a way advantage over this guy, you know, still, you know, knock on wood, you know, I have both working knees, and I'm more than half his age. So the equitable thing would be, okay, if he gets to the 15-yard line or whatever, before I get to the 50-yard line, then, you know, then he wins, you know, 'cause it's acknowledging, you know, acknowledging that there's differences before you get to that starting point. And that was the goal here, is acknowledging the fact that if you're a team where none of the players played, you know, either any wiffle ball or no fast pitch wiffle ball, you know, earlier in the year, that's cool. You know, that's great. still here to compete in no penalty. Or if your team, if guys did compete, but your team is made up of guys, from all over, that's cool. That's great. There's no problem there, but it's acknowledging that you are at an advantage over a team that grinded out all year as a team and succeeded as a team. Cause that's a big thing. These teams still have to succeed. They're just not getting rewarded for just showing up. They still have to succeed at these tournaments. And it's just acknowledging, that reality, which we all know is there, but, kind of got ignored at different points, for whatever reason. So it's just, it's making it more equitable, bringing those teams up. And I think it's really cool the way it's played out. Like you look at the Waves or WSEM that got two of these bids, both of those teams, played in three different environments where they could have got these bids. They played in MAW, they played at the NWLA tournament, they played at the MLW tournament. And, the Waves are kind of beat up right now. I know Bryce's arm's a little bit beat up. WSEM is going to be shorthanded without some of their guys they would like to have at United Wiffle. And that's the entire point that, okay, because, they're beat up because they have been playing in all this stuff, all year long, and they're shorthanded, because of just whatever happens, because, their guys can't make every day. And now they're put into a better position that they've earned, in order to get through to Sunday. And that's the whole point.
Yeah, no, there's not, there's not one, type of wiffle ball team, we're trying to allow for teams and players of, of all shapes and sizes to, compete in, what is, and we very much, take this seriously, what we believe is, a fair and a balanced system.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's making it more fair. It's making it more fair. That's really what it's about. It's about closing that gap between some of these teams.
Yeah, I mean, we know this. It hasn't always been this way in the past, but we're in no position to turn away any teams. Yeah. But we also, we understand the need to cater to as many groups as possible. Yeah. And, again, using the Midwest example, going from 2 to 7 teams, that happened on purpose. And because, because of reaching out and because of playing in different events and, in different parts of the country, now we're bearing the fruit of, oh man, there's 7 really high quality teams coming from the Midwest that weren't there in 17, 18, 19.
Yep. No, exactly. It's a great thing about wiffle ball. The fact that the whole point of wiffle ball is that it closes that gap, is that you don't have to be a talented physical specimen that, that's needed to, throw a fastball, a baseball 98 miles an hour and throw a big league curveball and make it to the major leagues in order to be a good wiffle ball player. And, it's a thing that everyone can do, no matter what sort of your background is, your shape, and that's something that, we're trying to embrace on this, higher level. There is no standard team. There is no way to put it together. Let's, it's just sort of opening up to all of those rather than, I think sometimes, maybe get too focused on, the hardcore play, on a certain group of players rather than, sort of thinking it through on everyone's, needs. And this one of the things I was thinking about, recently there was a comment made, I guess directly to you, more indirectly in my general direction, chatting about wiffle ball with a player, and said something along the lines of, with this tournament, with any tournament, the big, thing is just you want to make sure the best team wins. And, and that really made me think when, that was said, because it sounds simple enough, right? What do you want out of a tournament? You want the best team to win. But then when you think about it, it's not that simple.
It's not simple at all. There's so many things that go into that.
Well, it's not even so many things that go into it too. It's how you define what the best team is. Like, is the best team just any team that wins a tournament? So in that case, you wouldn't even care about anything else because just you could put on any tournament, whoever comes out the winner is the best team, or is, you know, so that's one way to look at it. Or is the best team the team that loses the fewest number of games in the tournament? Is the best team the team with the most talent? Is it the team that plays the best from a production standpoint, even if they don't, even if they lose some more games? Is the best team the team that played, you know, the best all year, including, you know, the NCT or whatever? Is the best team the one with the best collection of players, or, you know, or is it, the, you know, the team that's kind of the best overall unit? Is it, you know, is it the one that would be favored against the competition in a single game? Is it the team that would be favored over the competition in the best of series? Or, you know, is it the team with the most depth that can survive a long war of attrition? You know, like, there's all these different ways of looking at it, you know, that really sort of complicates it. You know, and again, that was sort of, you know, focus point with how this kind of, this tournament came together is, you know, the number one big thing being that, you know, making wins and losses really, really matter. That was something that got positive feedback on last year. And I think it's very, very basic, but I think sometimes, you know, it's maybe been overlooked in the past. And I think we kind of took it to a next step this year. You know, you look at round one, it's basically a 2-game, you know, drop back for whichever loss you get. You know, if you start 2-0 and then you lose a game, now you've got to play 2 more games than a team that went 3-0. Then if you lose 2 games in that first round, now you've got to play 2 more games, or maybe even 3 more games than a team that lost 1 game. So, you know, it's that's on purpose. You know, I know a lot of people's eyes bugged out with the 11 and 12 game, you know, path, but, you know, that's on purpose because no one wants to do that. And, you know, that's why it's out there to incentivize you to avoid that.
That's the point. Yeah. We don't want do-overs and mulligans. You know, you don't want too many of those.
Yeah. To circle back, you know, to the whole best team thing is, yeah, because I think when you have so many mulligans, then that really sort of that muddles that best of, you know, who the best team winning thing even more, because, you know, when to sort of answer that, you know, question, even though we kind of said it was unanswerable, you know, I think the answer is, yeah, well, the team that, you know, plays the best that day, but then to go back to the equitable thing, you know, making sure that, you know, you sort of more evenly, you know, we only kind of partially did it this year, you know, because there's plenty of teams that, you know, did play and play really well all season that, you know, that, you know, didn't get one of these spots. But, you know, if you sort of have the good, you know, equitableness, I don't know if equitableness is a word, but if it's equitable, close, starting point and fair, and you have a system where that it's just, hey, win and you're good, lose and you're not so good. You know, I think that's how you come out to the, you know, to the best team, you know, a tournament where a team can go 5-3 and win a tournament over a team that goes 7-1, which has happened in the past in national championships. Yep. You know, it's hard. It's almost impossible to say that's getting you to the best team. So that's why, you know, wins and losses, you know, really sort of matter in this structure. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, even if a team comes from through round two and, you know, ends up in the finals and beats a team that was 6-0 up to that point, well, at least that team played four or five more games, you know, depending on the situation, than that other team. At least there's a significant, you know, thing for it. And at the end of the day, they probably did have the best tournament. They just, you know, because if you're going to lose those 3 games and still win all those, you probably slipped on some banana peels along the way.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure that that's the case and not just, oh, I kind of took this game off and I lost it, and now I get to come back, you know, without penalty.
Yep. And, like, you know, one of the things that, you know, we also, you know, put a lot of thought back into is, you know, we want to make sure that the teams that, you know, due to the list, you know, particularly, you know, the championship round, you know, tank, you know, we want to, that final four, we, you know, you want to see the best team, not necessarily, you know, the deepest or the last team standing. You know, you want those games to be as thrilling as they, you know, can be.
Yep. And at the beginning of the tournament, I think, you know, what this sort of does is, you know, in terms of depth, obviously, if you have a lot of good players and a lot of, you know, if you have a lot of good depth, that's always going to be an advantage, you know, no matter what the situation is, you know, in any sport. And obviously, you know, more so in wiffle ball, just because of the, the need for innings and the need for, you know, pitchers that can go long. So obviously that's always going to be an advantage, but what this does is it kind of lessens that depth advantage just a tiny bit. It kind of sort of makes depth a little bit less of a factor, because if you are a team with one or two pitchers who, are kind of forced by the makeup of your team to throw your best pitchers early, in this situation, you know that, because the teams you're facing don't want to go, don't want to lose a game, definitely don't want to lose two games, that it's going to be more sort of, mano a mano. It's going to be sort of, a one-to-one battle. It's not going to be, let's just sort of get through this, early, and then we start throwing our good pitchers. No, you want to win early on, and it kind of gives those teams more of a chance. Yep. We were talking about the MAW teams earlier. And I think, we also talked about, just being excited to see how this thing plays out. One of the things I'm most excited for is, I think, I don't think some people fully appreciate yet. I think how competitive a lot of these early games are going to be. I think one of the big differences in terms of the team makeup from last year to this year is, if you look at the list of teams last year, there was somewhere, between 6 and 8 teams that, even coming into the tournament, you looked them on paper and you're like, and it played out this way in reality, some of them still won a game just because they got matched up with one of these other teams. But we were just like, okay, they just don't have they don't even have the one pitcher to even sort of get them a win or to sort of, be competitive in there. I look at the list this year and, obviously we still have, two teams that are in formation here, but even, if they kind of play out how like they're forming now, I don't think it's going to change it a big deal. You look at this year's list, I think it's more like 2 to 4 teams, four kind of being the tops, where they don't have that, that one pitcher that can win them games. And then I think you look at the middle, that's even solidified more. Yeah. And so I think it's going to be, I have heard people, say or wonder, well, am I better off in round two or better off in round one? Well, that's a decision every team has to make. But you look at this field and there's so many teams that I would not want to play early in the day when their pitchers are fresh. And there's a lot of MAW teams. There's several Midwest teams I put in there. I put in one of the Texas teams in that group where, if you're playing them on their 6th and 7th game, you're probably in a better position. You're playing them 1st or 2nd when their pitchers are sharp, it's going to be tough. And I think, I think that's something I'm really looking forward to this tournament. I think these early games are going to be, a battle, I think even more so than maybe, people realize yet.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, you especially in both routes, but, route one, you want to come out there, firing on all cylinders. And if you, if by your blind draw, you get a guy, in the first game, like, Dave Capobianco, that's not something to look forward to. A fresh cap is as much of a challenge as, you'd get, it early in route two.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a ton of them. And like I'm not saying this to act like, these teams aren't, contenders or whatever, but there's a lot of teams that, don't jump off the page at you, if you're just, if you haven't seen them all play, or if you're not, following it deeply, whether it's a new school risers with Cap or an OG Goon squad with, Marte and, Fink just being the great hitter he is and, becoming a pretty good pitcher too, around the Midwest with, you don't want to face Evan Sibbett when he's fresh after what he did a couple weeks ago at the NWLA tournament. Team we announced, today when we're recording this, the Third Ridley Park team, you don't want to face Brendan Bowes or Zane Johnston when they're fresh, especially probably Bowes, who, not a lot of people have seen. I'm leaving off a lot of them. There's literally like half of the field kind of falls into, I think all the, besides the main Ridley Park team, the long balls, I would say fall into that too. You don't want to, you'd much rather, not face Nate Smith or Greg Myers early on, especially if that team's hitting. There's so many examples of that. And I think it's going to be a real, it's going to be a real dogfight, which, again, is sort of the point. To kind of move towards, encouraging or incentivizing teams to put their best foot forward right away.
Yeah. And that's, you know, at the end of the day too, you know, we draw it, you draw it out all on paper, but you got to go out and play those games. Yeah. And that's what makes Saturday specifically, you know, early in Route One, you know, those games are, you know, there's going to be some fantastic games.
Yeah. I mean, most of this stuff, yeah, like you were saying earlier, it isn't simple to answer, simple to, you know, sort of put into context, but I think that really is, it's just, you know, there's obviously, you know, very specific features of this, you know, tournament structure, but at the end of the day, it's really, really simple. It's, you know, win and you're in great shape, you know, lose and, you know, you lose too many games and you're screwed, you know, and that's just, you know, that's just, you know, what it is. So I think it's gonna make for a really cool atmosphere. Yeah. And I'm just really excited to see the competition because I think it took a step up this year in terms of, like I said, that sort of from the perspective of, you know, of every team having a shot to really make some noise in this tournament, whether that's playing spoiler and, you know, we I know you've talked to a few people that have, you know, I don't think use the word spoiler, but, you know, I've kind of, you know, already said they're kind of relishing that role. Like they, you know, there's plenty, like you said, every team goes into a tournament, you know, kind of, you know, dreaming and imagining they can win. And that's true. You know, I think we did that every single tournament we ever played. And, you know, even if, no matter how bizarre the scenario was, you come up with a scenario in your head of, you know, here's how we're going to win. But there's also, you know, realism to it of that's probably not going to happen, but hey, I can make some noise. You know, and I, you know, and we can come out of this tournament looking real good because that's what it's about. At the end of the day, this is a big national tournament. If you make it to Sunday in any sort of, you know, fashion, you should be very, very proud of, you know, of your accomplishments. You know, if you don't make it to Sunday, you know, and you played above your head, you should be, you know, proud of that. If you're a team that had a great season and stumbles in this tournament, you should still hold your head up high. Cause like we said, this isn't the be all end all. It's, you know, it's one tournament and, you know, at the end of a long season, you know, it's just about going out there competing and giving it your all.
Yeah. And I think one last thing I have to add is, you know, I think this year, I think the floor and has been raised in terms of the teams, you know, like, I mean, we literally can count, you know, just a few teams that probably have no chance, but I think the overall floor has risen, but I don't necessarily think the ceiling has. So that just gives the opportunity for any of these, you know, for any team in this tournament to go out there, take care of business, and you can walk away, you know, you take care of business, you walk away, you know, with the championship.
Yep. Yeah. The door is certainly open. And so the last thing I'll add to your last thing is, you know, to kind of go back to the beginning, like you just said there that, you know, the floor is raised, but the ceiling necessarily hasn't. I agree with that. And I think, you know, in the floor is raised, not because teams got deeper or, you know, or that kind of thing. I think the floor raised just because there's more talent, you know, in this year's tournament, and it's still pretty equally spread out, you know, I mean, obviously not equally, but you know what I mean? It's still sort of, you know, like if you look down on a spectrum, it's not going from these four teams have a chance to win, you know, these 28 teams, you know, have no chance. And these 10 teams are in the middle. I don't think I got to 44, but you know, something like that. It's more sort of, you know, a very sort of, you know, linear progressive type, you know, thing, you know, in terms of the talent distribution, and that's going to make for a very competitive and fun tournament.
Yeah, there's never been a greater collection of players, you know, this many as good as they are, you know, possibly in, you know, in Wiffle NCT history, but it's certainly not, you know, certainly the most in the last, you know, 10 years or so.
Yep. No, exactly. And I just thought of one more thing that I want to go back to from what you said earlier. Is you were talking about, you know, also an important thing is to make sure we get to the end of the tournament. And I know we talked about this last year, but you know, you get to the end of the tournament and guys still have some bullets and it's not just last team standing, you know, and to that end, you know, again, that was a lot of thought that went into this tournament structure. You know, so if there aren't any upsets in round two, if things just, you know, go chalk like you would expect them to do with the 2-2 teams losing, and some 2-2 teams aren't going to advance, that's just going to happen, and that's cool. That's going to be a great Cinderella story. But if everything went chalk, and this is, you know, how it's designed, 10 out of the final 16 will have a 7-game path to the championship. In that same scenario, all the final 22, when the tournament's cut in half on Sunday, all that final 22 will have a either an 8 or 9 game path to the championship. So, you know, it's very reasonable. That's actually less games than a lot of big 16 team tournaments have used over the past, you know, X amount of years. Yeah. A 44 team single elimination tournament is if you don't get that first round bye and 24 teams don't, it's 6 games to the championship. So, you know, it's only, you're only adding one more game to the, you know, to the low points with here, and you're adding a whole lot of a whole lot of extra games. Teams are going to be able to play five and a half games on average, which is pretty big. But, you know, so it's 5.5 on average, but you're still only playing 7, 8, or 9 most likely to win the tournament. So, you know, high floor, low ceiling. And I think we'll get into not that more next week, but next week we'll talk maybe a little bit more about some of the cool sort of strategy type things, gameplay elements of this tournament, both from a format perspective that it may introduce, you know, that may make, you know, teams use their pitchers in a little bit different way, which could be interesting. And then also just from a general, you know, gameplay standpoint, last year we were all concentrated on, you know, different styles sort of melding. I think in a year that's become passe because, you know, so many people play everywhere now, but, you know, we could talk a little bit about like what we sort of, looking for from an on-field standpoint. So that's all for us today. We'll be back next Monday for our second episode of Holy Commutes. And then, so do we have three before the tournament?
Yeah, we'll have three before the tournament.
Okay, and then one after. So yeah, so we'll be back these next 2 weeks with more preview stuff. That's what we'll talk about next week, beyond the field stuff. And and then we'll be back after the Monday after the tournament for a couple preview episodes with a recap. So thanks everyone for joining us, and we'll see you soon.